Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a recording of a Dhamma talk on paradox in the Dhamma. This was recorded in Upper Black Eddy, Pennsylvania on March 22, 2017. A related article and all of my Dhamma talks and voice and video recordings are available at crossrivermeditation.com. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation. Thank you. Peace. Greetings, friends, and welcome to my Wednesday Dhamma talk. A recording of this is available on my website and on my YouTube channel, and an audio-only recording is on my podcast. All of those are available through my website. And this talk is it follows an article that I published a few weeks ago called "Modern Buddhism: A Thicket of Views." And it's kind of the focus right now of what I'm teaching. I always teach the Dhamma as it is found in the Pali Canon, but also I'm finding it more and more important to try to untangle that thicket of views that modern Buddhism has become, and to try to diminish, at least, I know I can't eliminate it completely, all the confusion in modern Buddhism, these incredibly important, probably the most important teachings that humanity has ever been given, has become so distorted, so confusing that it's almost impossible to make heads or tails of it. And the result of that confusion is usually trying to find some type of common ground between all the different modern Buddhist practices out there, most of them from the Mahayana school, but that's just because that's the prevalent form of Buddhism, this Protestant form that has very little to do with what the Buddha actually taught. And again, I always have to qualify that. I'm not trying to denigrate any other teaching, just to bring some clarity. I know that I struggled for many, many years in the different modern Buddhist schools, just trying to make sense of all these different goals and purposes, or lack of any purpose at all, and it just left me very confusing. And it wasn't until I finally studied what the Buddha actually taught in the Pali Canon that it started to make sense, and that it became useful and highly effective in developing what the Buddha taught as his goal, to recognizing suffering, understanding it, and understanding and eliminating my own individual contributions to confusion, deluded thinking, and suffering. So the this article, "Paradox in the Dhamma," it's on the website. All of these articles and talks are based on a sutta that I have put on the website and commented on. In relation to maintaining authenticity between the sutta itself and what the Buddha taught for 45 years, which is understanding and developing the Four Noble Truths. So this is a talk in an article about the paradoxes that have arisen due to the changing intent of Dhamma practice. Often modern Buddhism is presented as a religion that is prone to confusion and failure, with very conflicting goals. This is a quote from a recently deceased, internationally recognized Buddhist teacher. "Thus we arrive at the paradoxical truth of the Buddha way. The only possible free choice we can make is to choose to work for the freedom of all humankind, indeed of all sentient beings. Failure may be inevitable, but recognizing that is the first step in becoming free." So this obviously got my attention. Can you imagine the Buddha teaching, standing up in front of a large group of people or one-on-one with an individual, saying that what I'm going to teach you is likely to fail, that failure is inevitable, but recognizing that failure in this practice is inevitable is the first step. Can you imagine anyone wanting to follow that? I certainly wouldn't. But again, in very subtle ways, much of modern Buddhism is presented that way. Often the qualification is that it's so difficult and so complicated that it takes endless lifetimes to develop, that it's an unachievable goal. And of course, that's all part of Mahayana Buddhism, and it's not something that the Buddha taught. Let me continue with the article. As pointed out by this teacher, the Bodhisattva ideal is a significant paradoxical doctrine of modern Buddhism. This altruistic but confused and paradoxical notion states that it is the highest form of Buddhist practice to delay individual awakening, in other words, to delay your own, until all beings are awakened, or to seek awakening for the sole benefit of all sentient beings. This is often presented as an unattainable goal, as unawakened beings are endless, and that is predetermined to failure. It also confuses the individual process of directly self-awakening. When the Buddha described himself, he always consistently described himself as the rightly self-awakened one. In other words, it was up to him to awaken, and he taught a way for all of us to awaken if we engage in the practice. Awakening isn't something that's bestowed on us or given to us because we've done enough prostrations or chants or meditated long and hard enough. It's by developing the Eightfold Path that we rightly gain self-awakening. Engaging in the Dhamma and taking true refuge in the Dhamma does not begin with recognizing the paradox of attempting to save all sentient beings, but with the realistic and achievable goal of individual awakening. Again, that's what the Buddha taught. Engaging in the Dhamma begins to disentangle one from the difficulties and distractions of self-identity reinforced by constant social interaction. And that's another aspect of the Dhamma, this whole idea of engaged Buddhism, that our practice should be focused outward, or at least to a great extent focused outward in altruistic acts and causes that are often themselves have a lot of eye-making in those causes. And that's not to say we shouldn't be concerned about what's happening in the world today. But if we truly are concerned about the state of the world and where we're going as a society, the most loving thing we can do for ourselves and for all sentient beings is to first take to the Dhamma and awaken. The Buddha did not, at least there's no record of the Buddha engaging in any type of altruistic behavior until he had awakened. And it was at that point when he understood the true nature of life and the true nature of suffering, that's when he began teaching what he knew. And again, so that doesn't mean that we shouldn't be kind and caring and loving towards others. But if we're really concerned about the state of the world today, we'll take to the Dhamma and awaken. The Buddha often said, as an unawakened bodhisattva, when he referred to himself in the past, prior to his awakening, he consistently used that phrase, when I was an unawakened bodhisattva. And what does that mean? It means that even though he had an open and loving heart and a concern for all human beings, he still did not know how to offer true assistance to others. So I'll continue with that. As an unawakened bodhisattva, I had the thought that renunciation and seclusion is good, but being an unawakened bodhisattva, my heart did not leap at renunciation, meaning recognizing all self-referential views and abandoning those self-referential views. That's the essence of the Buddhist teachings. I did not grow confident or steadfast in the Dhamma. He was still distracted by these ideals of saving all other people. And that's a convenient distraction from actually doing the work on yourself, isn't it? I'm here to help others, not to help myself. Well, the most loving thing we can do for ourselves and all sentient beings is to take to the Dhamma and awaken, and then to engage with the world from that awakened point of view. I did not grow confident or steadfast in the Dhamma. I did not see renunciation as bringing peace. Then the thought occurred to me that I have yet to understand the drawback of self-indulgence through sensual pleasures. And there is a subtle and sometimes not so subtle pleasure and draw to proving how wonderful we are by helping all other people. Or to even to go to that great magnanimous extent of, I'm not going to awaken until everyone is awakened. It sounds great on the surface, but just look at it a little bit and you realize the incredible eye-making, the incredible conceit that's in that phrase. The Buddha continues, I have yet to understand the reward of renunciation. That is why my heart does not engage fully with the path and with renunciation. In other words, at when he was an unawakened bodhisattva, he didn't yet understand that it was the self-referential views that were continuing eye-making, that were continuing in the Second Noble Truth. It states that craving originates and clinging perpetuates suffering. Those are individual contributions to suffering. And in order to develop awakening and to cease our own contributions, we have to renounce that. We have to abandon craving and clinging for self-referential views and for the establishment of an individual. That is something that is so important, and it's so, I don't even want to say it's overlooked, because I think it's seen, but it is ignored. And ignoring something is the essence, especially ignoring the Buddha's direct teachings, is the essence of ignorance. And remember, I often say how the dependent origination states that it is from ignorance of Four Noble Truths that all manner of confusion, deluded thinking arises. And this is what the Buddha is referring to here. I want to read that last line again. That is why my heart does not engage fully with the path in renunciation. Again, he's talking about when he was an unawakened bodhisattva. His heart wasn't in it because he did not want to recognize and abandon self-referential views. The Buddha continues. Then the thought occurred to me, if having understood the drawback of sensual pleasures leading to distraction and suffering, and I pursued the path my heart would leap at renunciation, and I would develop freedom, release, and lasting peace and happiness. In other words, it's by recognizing and abandoning this continued eye-making that we do through craving and clinging that is the problem. And when we engage with the path wholeheartedly, meaning the Eightfold Path, we're able to gain release and lasting peace and happiness. The Buddha spoke of being a bodhisattva prior to his awakening and describes the confused and paradoxical quality of mind of an unawakened bodhisattva. He certainly did not delay his awakening until all sentient beings, or we'd all still be waiting for a Buddhist practice. He never would have attained that goal. And he never presented himself as a savior. This is something else that has gotten so far misunderstood. The Buddha never set himself up as a being to be worshipped, as anything special other than the first human being to develop this understanding, which he refers to. Another misunderstanding is that these teachings have been around forever, and we just keep rediscovering them. The Buddha was clear when he said that these teachings have never been here before. In other words, he developed that. And that's important, because then the understanding that a human being developed this leads to the acceptance that we can do the same. So I'm getting a little bit off the topic, but it's important to make this note here. About 400 years after the Buddha's passing, there was a sect called the Mahasanghikas that wanted a more visionary type of Dhamma practice. They also wanted to change some of the monastic rules. They wanted to view the Buddha as a god among many gods. And this is relating now to the cultural influences that it was passing through. So they split from the monks and nuns that were still practicing what the Buddha taught. And that was the precursor to modern Mahayana Buddhism. It was founded on the desire for a Protestant form of Buddhism. And that's exactly what developed. Again, I'm not disparaging them, but there is a definite split that we can look to historically. And the reason for that split was to create a more mystical, magical, and esoteric type of Buddhism with the Buddha as a god among many gods. And that's certainly what has developed, and it speaks to this paradox, and that the paradox that's there and this paradox that has arisen with the idea of and the ideal of the bodhisattva. Let me continue. The Buddha, he awakened through his own efforts and through his own inquiry into impermanence, not self, and dukkha, the three marks of existence. And that's what is developed through understanding the Four Noble Truths. He did not teach a salvific religion. He taught an eightfold path that any human being could engage with and become rightly self-awakened as he awakened. An awakened human being is of far more benefit to all humanity than an unawakened bodhisattva, as the Buddha's own awakening shows, and as the results of the millions of practitioners who have sincerely taken the bodhisattva path and followed that path to a very to the establishment of a very, very confusing and contradictory modern Buddhism, a thicket of views. The Eightfold Path does not begin by recognizing the futility of saving all sentient beings or any other confused or paradoxical teaching. The Eightfold Path presents the real possibility to awaken by taking responsibility for what one is responsible for and can realistically achieve. In other words, the Buddha never taught anything that a human being could not individually develop. It's not based on gaining some type of merit or doing an endless number of rituals. It's not even dependent on extremely long meditation sessions. It only requires developing understanding through a meditation practice that brings deep concentration that then supports the refined mindfulness of the Eightfold Path. There is no paradox in the Buddha's original and direct teachings. Paradoxical Buddhist teachings developed well after the Buddha's death and teaching career. I just mentioned how that began. But there was always a desire, even during the Buddha's time, to alter and accommodate his teachings to fit individual views. Well, it wasn't just that major split about 400 years after his death. There's many accounts in the Pali Canon of even the Buddha's direct students that wanted to change his teachings to fit their views, or even those that wanted to bring harm to the Buddha, to kill him, and establish themselves as a teacher. The story of Devadatta, one of the Buddha's cousins, comes to mind. Who tried twice unsuccessfully to murder the Buddha and take over the Sangha. And he had a big following at the time. There were Devadatta had about 500 monks and nuns following him. And if you think about that, this is during the Buddha's teaching career, in that there was still such a strong desire to make the Dhamma something other than it was and fit individual views, including this notion of the Bodhisattva ideal. Let me go back just a little bit. There is no paradox in the Buddha's original and direct teachings. Paradoxical Buddhist teachings develop well after the Buddha's death and teaching career. The only failure that can be attributed to Dhamma practice is to become distracted by later developed Buddhist teachings that are confusing, contradictory, and paradoxical. In the Satisasana Sutta, the Buddha is asked by Upali. This is a sutta that's only a couple paragraphs long, and it gets right to the heart of the matter. He was asked by Upali, then a follower of Nagantha Nataputta, who was someone who the Buddha was well aware of and had studied their teachings and rejected them. He was a teacher of Jainism, which is still prevalent today. Jainism is still a recognized world religion. And Nagantha Nataputta was the primary Jain teacher in the Buddha's time. Upali, then a follower of Nagantha Nataputta, a contemporary of the Buddha's, asked if he would give a brief teaching of the Dhamma so that having heard that, he would dwell secluded, heedful, ardent, and resolute in his understanding. In other words, if the Buddha would just present a concise teaching to Upali. Upali is asking how to determine a useful and effective teaching from a doctrine that would lead to more confusion. And this was a common problem during the Buddha's time. The Kalama Sutta is a sutta that he gave to the Kalamas who lived on a trade route, and they were very confused by all the spiritual teachers that came through on that route, all claiming to have the one true Dhamma practice. And how did they discern that? And the Buddha, there's a link on the website and an article and a talk on the Kalama Sutta on the website. The Buddha, briefly, he simply said that you have to develop the path and experience it for yourself, and then weigh that understanding against other teachings. That's the only way you can determine it. So here he gives a little bit more concise way of determining that. The Buddha responded to Upali, "Be mindful of those qualities of mind and doctrines that do not lead to complete disenchantment or dispassion. Be mindful of those qualities of mind and doctrines that do not develop cessation and calm." So I'm going to continue with the Buddha's teachings. But just to bring what he said here in the context of today's Dhamma talk, there is great passion that often follows and often precludes taking the Bodhisattva vow. It's presented as the primary vow in modern Buddhism, and it's presented as the path. And if you look at that closely, we're creating great passion now for saving all sentient beings And also at the same time, we're saying, I don't want to awaken. I'm putting aside my own awakening so I can fulfill this passion of saving all sentient beings, and then I'll awaken. Again, if the Buddha was stuck in that passionate view, we wouldn't have any type of Buddhist practice. The Buddha continues, when you are mindful of the qualities of mind and the doctrine that develops cessation and calm, when you are mindful of the qualities of mind and the doctrine that develops direct knowledge of the Four Noble Truths and to self-awakening, to unbinding, then you will know this is the Buddha's Dhamma, this is the Buddha's teaching. So again, the Buddha often used the word ehepasiko, coming see for yourself. But he said that after explaining the Dhamma. So ehepasiko means once you develop the Dhamma, you will see for yourself if it's useful. Upali would become a monk in the Buddhist Sangha and awaken as a result of direct knowledge gained through wholehearted engagement with the Eightfold Path. Having understood the importance of discerning the Buddha's teachings and a useful method of distinguishing the Dhamma from other dharmas, he would become an arahant, an awakened human being. At the first Buddhist council, shortly after the Buddha's death, Upali, along with Ananda, would recall and recite the Buddha's teachings. Ananda would report the suttas, or the doctrine, and Upali would recite the Vinaya, or the monastic discipline. And you can see the importance of that encounter with Upali and how that pithy teaching directed Upali towards awakening in a very simple and direct way. The First Noble Truth describes the truth of suffering, which includes confusion and seeming paradox in the impermanent phenomenal world. Confusing and paradoxical dharmas arise by adapting and accommodating the Buddha's direct teachings to fit a confused and paradoxical doctrine. This confused doctrine is often then used to continue to establish a self-referential view and a self-referential view of Buddhism, or a self-referential Buddhism, a Buddhist practice that only continues the self-referential eye-making views, which is completely contradictory to what the Buddha was teaching. So this was understandable how this developed, as it was the initial confusion and seeming paradox of the world and the unsatisfactory nature of human life that caused Siddhartha Gautama to leave his life of luxury and spend 6 arduous years seeking understanding. Many of the spiritual practices he mastered during those 6 years he rejected precisely because they were confusing and paradoxical and did not lead to the goal. The Buddha awakened to the cause of all human unsatisfactoriness, ignorance. This is a very specific ignorance. Dependent origination teaches very clearly that from ignorance of 4 Noble Truths through 12 observable causative links, the unsatisfactory nature follows, dukkha follows, or dukkha occurs. He presented this first teaching as the 4 Noble Truths. He would spend the next 45 years teaching always in the context of developing understanding of these truths. Developing the Buddha's Eightfold Path does take right effort. A consistent shamatha vipassana meditation practice developed within the framework of the Eightfold Path brings lasting peace and happiness. Engaging wholeheartedly with the Eightfold Path does not begin with acknowledging the confusing and paradoxical nature of the Dharma, of all the modern Dharmas, but the understanding that through direct inquiry, through the original teachings of the Buddha, that will bring understanding and release. If a teaching presented as Buddhism seems confusing or paradoxical, the lesson that the Buddha presented to Upali is useful. Does the teaching hold the possibility of developing understanding of the Four Noble Truths? Of course, it has to include the Four Noble Truths to develop understanding of that. Will it develop cessation of self-referential views, or does it further establish self-referential views? Is there more eye-making in that, in whatever that so-called Dharma practice is? Remember that every teaching the Buddha presented was to develop understanding of the generally unsatisfactory nature of life that is caused by craving to continue and establish an ego personality and clinging to objects, events, views, and ideas that maintain the confusion and paradoxical nature of an ego self. Every teaching the Buddha presented was presented in the context of Four Noble Truths. And he often stated that I teach understanding suffering and the cessation of suffering, nothing more. That's from the Samyutta Nikaya 22.45, if you want to look it up. I see that there is one viewer. We had two. whoever that is, welcome. I'm learning this platform a little more, and shortly I'll have the ability to interact more directly with the viewers. I think that's it. If you want to contact me, please send me an email through my website. And if you're interested in spending a retreat where we are more or less immersed in these Buddhist teachings, the next retreat is in May, linked on my website also. And we will develop an understanding of the Buddha's first three teachings. These are called the cardinal discourses of the Buddha. And then get a little bit more deeper into the wildly misunderstood notion of emptiness. We'll spend some time on the retreat understanding what the Buddha really meant by emptiness. So thank you for joining today. I hope you found some benefit from this talk. Peace.
Thank you for listening. Please visit crossrivermeditation.com for guided meditations and instruction, and Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos. We rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at crossrivermeditation.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Please feel free to contact me through crossrivermeditation.com. Peace.